Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, And the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh, oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She feel like you a motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
It's over. It's over. It's over. When I say it's over, everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of them.
Real quick.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pan-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Gotta push it in three times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on and sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. You're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you every day. I used to drive an SL, pretty gold convertible, nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't gonna be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
Okay. Somebody yesterday on another call requested that I do something or attempt to do something on a topic of H.R. 40. And the person that requested it is not here. So, and I loaded this show up early, so they might drop in, but let me go to H.R. 40 and see what they say about that. It's a has something to do with reparations. Let's see. Okay. What does Wikipedia have? All right. The Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African American Act. Okay, so this is a study. This isn't an act of Congress. All right. Is an act of Congress in the United States introduced in 1989 by Representative John Conyers. The act aims to create a commission to examine the merits of introducing reparations to African Americans for U.S. slavery. The current iteration of the act is sponsored by Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. All right. History of this. A matter of fact, let's just the long title for this is to address the fundamental injustice, cruelty, brutality, and humanity of slavery in the United States and the 13 American colonies from 1619 to 1865. That's interesting in and of itself because the United States did not become the United States until July 4th, 1776. But anyway, I don't know how they're going to work that out. But and to establish a commission to study and consider the national a national apology a national apology and proposal for reparations for the institution of slavery, its subsequent de jure and de facto racial and economic discrimination against African Americans, and the impact of these forces of living African Americans. Oh, they're bringing it into the future. To make, so basically they're just saying all African Americans are victims. To make recommendations to Congress on the appropriate remedies and for that proposal. There were a total of 196 sponsors, and it was announced in the 117th United States Congress. Like I said, this was introduced in 1989 by Representative Conyers. And successfully introduced in each Congress until his retirement almost 30 years later. June 10th, 2019, saw the House Judiciary Subcommittee of the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties conduct a hearing on this issue in what was seen as a historic sitting, giving the previous reparations discussion and that venue. All right, anyway, this is let's see some of the excerpts here. Approximately 4 million Africans and their descendants were enslaved in the United States and the colonies that became the United States from 1619 and 1865. The institution of slavery was constitutionally and statutorily sanctioned by the government of the United States from 1789 to 1865. The slavery that flourished in the United States constituted an immoral, inhumane, anyway, it's a lot here. Well, hey, you got a number of people that are on board for this. We have here the role of Northern complicity in the Southern. Just a whole lot of blaming going on here. There's a lot of people that want this. Cory Booker's on board. Sheila Jackson Lee's on board. Well, hey, Congress has got the money, so they do a lot of studies, so why not corporations? Once again, this is just a study. We don't know how long and expensive that's going to be. And then you've got some states that, well, hold on, now, what's this organization? The National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. Let's see what they're about. The National Coalition of Blacks in America, for Black Reparations in America. And we have to define black. What's that? If you came over from Haiti and moved to the United States, do you? I mean, this is just, you know, he got a long way to go with this. And it's been floating out here for 30 years so far. The National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations America, the formation was September 26, 1987. It's a political organization. They say it's international. They have their own website. Let's go to their website. Okay, well, that's loading too slow. On my laptop here. Anyway, all right, the person that requested it, she, you know what? I'm going to send her a text message because she up there bought it up and asked me, was I covering it? And I'm up here, I put in the thing, oh, let me send her something. Let's see. And then I'll go to the phone lines here. Because I didn't. Now, I guess this preparation, HR4, is on a national level. It is not because people that are doing it on a local level, like, Robinson, Illinois, they're doing stuff locally. Asheville, North Carolina, they're trying to organize something locally. I heard something in California, they're trying, whatever they're doing in California. So this HR 40 is the national bill. No. This is not a bill. This is for a study. And I'm just give me a minute. My board is running kind of slow here, so we will we'll get to the phones momentarily. Reparations. What do we have here? Let's see. No, we don't want Japanese reparations. We don't want New Zealand reparations. We don't necessarily want land rush reparations. Let's see what they have here.
The same psychological and emotional and spiritual forces that prevail within the journey of an individual prevail within the journey of a nation, because all that a nation is a collection of individuals. So if you're clued in as to what changes one life, you're clued in as to what changes the world. And what we know is that in order to transform a life, you can't just change things on the outside. You have to change things on the inside, too. And among other things, you have to be very clear, brutally honest with yourself about your character defects. You have to be willing to atone, you have to be willing to make amends, and you have to be willing to change. It's time for the United States to do the same in some areas where we have character defects as a nation, in areas where we have not lived, either in the past or in the present, as who we say that we are. We have not lived, and we are not living, on the principles on which we purport to stand. One of these areas is the issue of race. Now, we had slavery in the United States, obviously. We abolished slavery. But at the end of the Civil War in 1865, even though 40 acres and a mule was promised by General Sherman to every formerly enslaved person, in most cases, that acreage and that mule were not given, and even in the cases where they were, in most cases, they were then taken away. What that means is that full economic integration into the new condition of freedom was never achieved. In fact, quite the opposite. Throughout the American South, black code laws were passed, which were to ensure the subjugation of the formerly enslaved population. John Birch Society, Ku Klux Klan, lynchings, the institutionalization of white supremacy and segregation. And those horrors, that next phase of violence against black people in America, was not fundamentally addressed until the 1960s and the Civil Rights Movement. And once again, was progress achieved? Yes, progress was achieved. But we have not finished the job of full reconciliation. Not only that, in many ways we have slid backwards. We have actually chipped away at the Voting Rights Act. Mass incarceration is a horrifying example of an institutionalized racial discrimination in criminal sentencing. We have a problem in our times, and we need to address this problem, not just in incremental ways, but in fundamental ways. I propose a plan for reparations for slavery. Just as the German nation has paid $89 billion in reparations to Jewish organizations since World War II, and just as the United States has paid $20,000 in reparations to descendants of those who were in Japanese internment camps during World War II, I propose a $100 billion plan of reparations to be paid over 10 years. I submit that we should choose a council of esteemed African-American leaders who were given over a 10-year period $10 billion a year. And this money should be dispersed as they deem most appropriate in order for economic and educational revitalization to be achieved within the black community. It's time. It's time for a fundamental effort. It's time for us to do for future generations what other generations have done for us, to rise to the occasion in our time and make the kind of significant progress that will ensure that, to the best of our ability, ancient wrongs will be addressed, and new possibilities, new fairness, new liberty, new justice, which in this case, in many cases, was never fully achieved, shall be achieved in our time.
That was Marianne Williamson.
Really, really mean that. get yourself together. How can you call me brother when you don't respect my woman? How can you call me brother when I can't even trust you behind my back? Oh, how can you call me brother? How can you do it when you keep trying to rip me off? How in the world can you call me brother when we can't even have a man?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
just the other day. When I was hanging out down on the main drag, yeah, I went in to get me a small teeny weeny toddy for the evening, yeah. When I saw my tide is gone, I opened up the door, yeah, and there was my glove compartment all torn out from a dashboard. And here you come, here you come, here you come again, and grinning, yeah, and grinning, yeah. Here you come, here you come.
I know you did it
with the power sign, and talking about my man, solid on that, my brother. I said, I don't like, how can you really, 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 really mean it? I know about you, I know what you're good for, I know what you're doing around here, I know all about you. I know all about, I know you're my father, my father, low down, cheap, rotten, no good, son of a C-cup, yeah, I know you're dirty. Can't you use that?
Can't even trust you behind my back door.
I can't use it. That kind of can on, I don't buy.
Giving me the old bad handshake.
Don't do it. I can't use it, no.
Telling me right on.
Ain't no good.
All right, we had to set the tone for HR 40 with some appropriate victimhood music. All right, HR 40, as before we played the victimhood music, is I guess a piece of legislation. So they have a page on it on Wikipedia, where they will study it's supposed to organize a commission to study what happened during what we call in America slavery, and the effects, and they're going back from before the United States was the United States, up until 1865. You know what? Now, let me comment on this before I open up the phone lines here on this. I can tell you some of the things that happened before 1865. If you had people like Paul Cuffey, a black man, who was a shipbuilder, who built this ship that took about, 39 people over to the west coast of Africa and helped establish what we call today Sierra Leone. I can also tell you about a group of blacks that were formerly slaves that bought their freedom during slavery era, in the state of Maryland, and they formed, they got together. These were people that started off life legally as slaves, they learned a trade. They were called artisans. They were dressmakers, you know, seamstresses, blacksmiths. They knew how to build infrastructure, build houses, the whole nine. All black, though, and all born slaves, bought their freedom, chartered a ship over to West Africa again, and they started the Republic of Africa. You can read about that online. Today it's known as Maryland County, Liberia. And there's a, we did a whole month this past February of people that were born slaves that became wealthy during the slave era in Southern Jim Crow. I wonder if they're going to be studied under H.R. 40. In any event, if you have any opinions or comments on H.R. 40, this, once again, is it's supposed to be, and I'm just paraphrasing here, a study, you know, to see what happened during discrimination, slavery, Jim Crow, what, all that. Oh, you know what, Alpha, one of my specialties. Let's not forget about the black townships, many of which still exist, that were built by former slaves also. Anyway, oh, before we go to 407, hold on 407. I had a phone call this morning with somebody who was from Mound Bayou, Mississippi. In case you don't know the history of Mound Bayou, Mississippi, it was Mount Bayou, Mississippi, which is a town over 100 years old, and it's a historically black township here in the United States. That town, now, they got Benjamin Montgomery, I believe his name was Benjamin, born a slave. And he got his freedom. Then he went out to a part of Mississippi where he bought several acres of land. This is a person that was born a slave. Okay. I've said on here before, reparations can come in many different ways. He started his own town, which still exists to this day, Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Frank McWhorter, also known as Free Frank McWhorter, was born a slave in Missouri, purchased his freedom from his master, okay, crossed the river to Illinois. He purchased 80 acres of land and started the first black documented, first black incorporated town in what we now call the United States, called New Philadelphia, Illinois. It's a ghost town now, in a historic place, but Illinois still has at least two other black townships that exist to this day. So I'm just saying, for Free Frank McWhorter, his reparations came by, A, he bought his freedom, B, he bought the freedom of other people, C, 80 acres of land, D, he made a township out of that 80 acres of land, D, he became the mayor of the town that he created. That's what I call reparations. The common denominator is he was actually born a slave. How is a person who was born last night in 2022 going to get on the reparations bandwagon? But anyway, H.R. 2022 is not an act. It's not a bill. It's just, okay, let's see if we can organize a commission to study what happened and what kind of remedies should be appropriated. So, anyway, with that, let's go to the phone lines. 407, your mic is open.
Thank you, L.A., for that really valuable information about all the wealthy individuals who overcame slavery. That's so important. You know, when my dad was playing football back in the late 40s, early 50s, they had to segregate, as a black man in the NFL, they had to segregate where they had slept when they were traveling playing these games. And in his book, Sherman Howard, Football and Beyond, he shares about how they stayed in the homes of wealthy black people who had oil wells in their backyard. So this was his journey in the NFL early 50s as a black man, one of the few on the team, and they couldn't stay where the white.
Do you remember what state that was in?
Oh no, he just threw that out.
It could have been Oklahoma because Oklahoma and probably some Texas. Oklahoma was home of many a black, or some people call them Native American, oil barons. But the Ados crowd doesn't talk about them. I wonder why.
Yeah, so this, I'm just confirming what you're saying, is that even my dad experienced that in a segregated situation, that there were wealthy black people who were in fact, he said his accommodations were sometimes better than the other football players because they were in these wealthy homes and being fed, you know, home-cooked meals and all that. So, when he shared with me this rally of the Black Caucus or whoever they are, I forget her name, Sheila Jackson Lee, Congresswoman,
mm-hmm.
Talking about the pre-Juneteenth virtual rally, Why We Can't Wait, H.R. 40 on the Move. Now, I'm watching this this YouTube rally, virtual rally. It was a two-hour YouTube on with Sheila Jackson and all the other Black Caucus members all over it, the Democrats basically. There were no Republicans in there. And I'm watching this, but in the meantime, I'm watching the comments on the side because I know what they're about. And I'm watching the comments on the side of this video, which I do with most YouTube. I go to the comments, see what people are thinking. The majority of the comments were like, no, we don't want H.R. 40. We want 1865. And I still don't know what they mean by we want 1860, but they did not. It was no on H.R. 40. So I'm like, okay, so most of us are probably like, no, we don't want to have H.R. 40, which is establishing a 15-member commission to study the effects of slavery and discriminatory policies. What, in 2022, we got to study the effects of slavery? Really? It just goes to show you how out of touch our congressmen and government officials. They're making a whole lot of money doing what they do, deceiving, out of touch with the American people, promoting stuff that we don't even have an interest in, but they do. Because a 15-member commission, that means, what, maybe a couple of weeks of testimony and all that, and they're going to get paid for that. And we, on the other hand, are looking like, no, I don't think we need that. I don't think we need to study. Most of the black people I meet are in mental slavery. So that's my viewpoint. We got mental slavery still. Are they going to deal with that? Probably not. They're going to deal with 400 years of chattel slavery. And this is, we need reparations. And like you said, reparations comes in many forms. Why are we focusing on reparations when really what we need to do is get rid of those people who are creating this mess by their commissions and their study on things that are obvious, and then recommend appropriate remedies? Really? It just blew my mind. That's why I shared it with you. I know L.A. got an opinion on this, but I can't believe that we are still at this place with our congressman, senator, government. That's why we don't need this government, because they're so out of touch.
A lot of politicians, not all, but well, maybe all of them at one point or another. You know, it's a lot of people that, and we talked about this the other day, is victimhood a mental illness?
Yeah.
So you have a lot of people out here who have a victimization mindset, and when it comes to the topic of reparations, you know, we're looking at other people, you know, the Japanese, this, it. So, I mean, it blows my mind. How can a 20-year-old suffer from post-traumatic slave syndrome? I don't get that.
It's a generational.
And I've talked about my mother's sister. She passed away about 7 months before my mother did, 3 years ago. She passed at 105 years old. And I wasn't around her all her life. I never heard her talk about reparations. And she did pretty well for herself. I mean, she was living on acres of land that she left to my cousin. So, I mean, I don't get it, but I'm just one person.
Well, you know, Naima Peace, our executive producer of the Female Pooch, wrote a book called Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And that book brings out a lot of good points. However, as you said, a 20-year-old who thinks they have genes that are causing them to be stressed over slavery is kind of that's kind of the mental illness you talk about, the victimhood mental illness.
Right.
That because the modern day thinking in terms of health and well-being, Bruce Lipton and many others like him, cellular biologist, very conscious person, talked about epigenetics. But epigenetics is above the genes. And it's your environment that causes sickness and illness, not the genes. But we've got a lot of people who are still listening to modern day deceived pharmaceutical influenced medicine people who say, well, it's a genetic disorder. It's all in your genes. If your grandparents and the great grandparents were slaves, then you probably are being affected by that, blah, 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 blah. And so that's where we have the victimhood mind is in the genetic connection versus epigenetics above the genes that says your environment is what you have to change and your thinking.
Now, my comment on it is this. Every African-American, because we can split that up too, because some of us were Native Americans. None of our ancestors probably came on about it. But that's another topic. That they're going to study. But my whole thing is, for the ones who, let's say, have a total bloodline that you can trace back from the ships coming back over on both sides of the, you know, mother and father and all that, I'm looking at that these people, including myself, are the genetically come from a superior bloodline. That psychologically, spiritually, and on a DNA level endured and survived whatever they went through on before getting captured, in prison, on the slave ship, laying in the field. They experienced things on that slave ship. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the stench of land. I'm going to put it where the ghost get it. Land in your own piss and shit and that of others for whatever that voyage was, 1 or 2 months or whatever it was to get from Africa to wherever, Brazil or the Caribbean or wherever they were going. Just imagine the stench and then the food that you had to eat, the gruel, whatever it was. And then you're chained up and then you wake up and then on a regular, the person that you had made some kind of a bond with and all that hell, and that's really hell, okay, they're dead. None of us, nobody on this phone can say they've experienced that kind of shit, that kind of hell.
Well, yeah, now you think about Native Americans, because many of us don't even look at ourselves as African American. Elon Musk is a true African American, born in Africa, living in America as a citizen now. He's a true African American.
To say Elon Musk, a white man, is a real African American.
And so I think we could look at Native American history, the Trail of Tears, for example, the slaughter that this government intentionally perpetrated on Native American families and communities and tribes and all that. Even that, you know, Peggy Well-Known Buffalo, who we both know, who's still alive and in many ways suffering mentally from those catastrophes in the Native American community, because she was put in a school. She was taken from her family, like a concentration camp, really, with other Native American children, and endured even more psychological suffering as a true Native American who lives today to tell about it. So she has all kinds of health issues and mental, but she's still overcoming that by doing things in her community, not asking for help from the government, but establishing a community where they're growing their own food, where they have counseling. She's doing some amazing, and she's a foster mother, and she's not begging for anything from the federal government. She's establishing a sovereign community, even though she went through hell as a child on the reservation, being taken away from her parents. So there's so many victory stories out there, wealth, overcoming, creating new communities, all that. Why the hell do we need a 15-member commission to study the effects of slavery is the biggest joke of the week. And they're trying to make the goal of June 19th is the goal. Why we can't wait, H.R. 40 on the move, and we're going to have a reparations by Juneteenth. What the hell does that mean when people are still in mental slavery about this whole issue?
Well, I don't know. Reparations comes in different forms. Speaking of Juneteenth, which originated out of Texas, I believe, at one time, Texas had more black townships than any state in the union. They had at one time like 500 plus communities or settlements or townships or whatever you want to call them. Followed by Oklahoma. But there's about 900 to 1,000 of those black townships that were, once again, former blacks. And then if you look at the entire Western Hemisphere, okay, a number of black folks that did come across on those ships, a lot of those slaves, they're known as Maroons. Look it up. They have Wikipedia and pages and websites and books on this, on the Maroons. You know, they got away from their captors and then started their own communities. So, but anyway, politics is the art and science of looking out for your own interests. That's my house definition of politics. So,
and Democrats always pushing victimhood and more money from the government rather than teaching African Americans, Native Americans, how to be entrepreneurs and how to do for themselves. And that's one thing I have to give Trump credit for. When he was in office, he was more about pushing our communities to be self-sustained and entrepreneurs, because that's where he came from. And then what did the Democrats and all most black people, they wanted to dog Trump and crucify him, because he wasn't along with their agenda begging for stuff from the government. He was pushing an entrepreneur, let's get people out there doing their own thing versus depending on the government. So we now have to I think, communicate to these lawmakers what we really need, not H.R. 40, but we need some programs to help people develop their own businesses and entrepreneur and come out of mental slavery, is how I see it, not just with food.
Well, there's a bunch of programs out there already doing just what you said, that are designed for that. They already exist. They've been on the books for years, and some people have, you know, taken advantage of them, and some people don't. And, well, here's the thing. Not all black people are alike. So some people are on board. Some people are not on board. And you got everything in between, so.
Well, they got this guy who was on their video. He's Dr. Ron Daniels. He's head of some National African American Reparations Commission. Now, that title would make you think that all black people are behind this National African American Reparations Commission, because this must be a big deal for him. He's Dr. Ron Daniel. But I'm like, the more I looked at the comments, I'm like, everybody watching this is not on board with what they're saying. So,
well, you know what? One of the things I would like to know, okay, is, and let's talk to the legal aspect of this from a personal injury point of view. Now, reparations, that word means to repair. Now, in order to repair something, you must first prove that you have been injured. So for a person who's gung-ho on reparations from the federal government or wherever these days, is I would like to see a doctor's report how can this person in 2020, whatever's going on with them today, how can we link that to something that happened in 1865?
It's all mental. It's all mental. Yeah, and the fact that Naima, again, wrote this book, Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder, and I haven't read the full book, but she points out what you're talking about is how are we today affected by that. It's all mental. It's all mental. The mind has been programmed, and these people like Congressman Sheila Jackson and all these people from California who are strong Democrats, they're the ones keep perpetuating this mental disease of victimhood. So that's what is really happening. The effects of slavery is that we can't let go of it. That's the problem. We can't let go of it mentally and historically. And that now we need a 15-member commission to study it. Oh, my goodness. What a waste of our tax. That's why this government is useless, in my opinion. Because what is going to be the result of a 15-member commission studying the effects of slavery and discriminatory policy? How many of us, even baby boomers, are fully aware of what the effects of slavery and discriminatory, but we overcame it anyway. My dad overcame all discriminatory policies in the football area, in employment, in every area you can imagine. So, and he's lived to be 95 years old. So he's a testament along with so many others that we don't have to be victims, staying victim, even though we have this history of slavery and discrimination. We don't, it's all about, in my opinion, your relationship with your environment, which includes nature and your and the creator and the universe. We got to rise to the Native American philosophy of being in touch with your nature, your natural environment, and get out of the cities. Like you always say, the cities are overpopulated and congested, creating the neurological and negative effects of slavery, being in crowded cities. So, yeah, this is just so ridiculous. I hope people are waking up. And I want to just put a plug in for our new YouTube channel. We want everybody who listens to subscribe to LA's and my new YouTube channel, because we're going to be promoting self-sufficiency, simple living on Beata's Tiny House Village. That's the name of the new YouTube channel that LA and I are going to be presenting videos on, to help people simplify their life if they choose. If you want to live in a mansion, that's your business. But if you're ready to simplify your life, learn more about how to find land and put a smaller house on it, how even to build a house, we're going to provide all that on this channel.
Including, so if you want to get your own 40 acres without the government's help, tune into that channel. We'll tell you how to get your own 40 acres without government help.
So please,
you can throw in a mule if you want to, but we'll tell you how to. I can't tell you how to get the mule, but we'll tell you how to get the 40 acres.
Yeah, Beata's Tiny House Village. Go there, please, and subscribe. And we're going to be starting to pump out some videos today on how location will be our first video on tiny house living. Location.
All right,
so
tune in. Hold on, Viata. Let's see. Let's take another caller here. 773, any comments on H.R. 40, reparations, or anything dealing with that? Oh, they dropped off the line. Okay. All right, that was a 773 number. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the next caller here. 314 area code. Your mic is open.
Yeah, it was my CIA agent was listening to you.
Oh, wait a minute, Pianki. Hold on a minute. Wait a minute, Pianki. Let me try it again. 773, your mic is open.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting subject. You know, first of all, I was part of the movement when John Conyers started it back over 30 years ago when he started the idea of H.R. 40. The concept was supposed to be to give some compensation for what had been done to us in the past, cutting off generational wealth and all that. The things you all have been talking about is wonderful for empowerment, and that was for some of us that managed to just be blessed and be selectively have the advantage. But for the majority of us, we went through all that. The question would have been, why were we buying back our freedom in the first place? Somebody must have stole us for us to even have to buy back our freedom. There were more advancements like Tulsa, Oklahoma. What did they do, burn that down? You had Rosewood. The government burned that down. So do include what the government had destroyed when they were supposed to be helping us out. So here's the point. Back then when they were doing the H.R. 40 piece, we were in the group saying, hey, hold on. It ain't even about money. Y'all want to do a study to say that we've been damaged when we already know we've been damaged. Pay us out. They've been looking for a study for over 30 years. All they're going to do is put together a commission and give some people some money to study what? They're supposed to just compensate us. If you can give illegal immigrant children who were delayed at the border $450,000 and give the Ukrainian government billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to fight their war and buy arms, y'all mean to tell me they can't give compensation because they stole generational wealth from people? We deserve some form of compensation. As a matter of fact,
let me ask you this. All right, hold. Let me
point this out real quick, L.A.
Okay,
this was the
right
point I was making, even with them. It isn't a matter of getting money. Reparations means cultural rights, sovereignty, exempt status, similar to what the Indians had gotten. The Native Americans got that piece where they were supposed to get exemption so they don't pay taxes. Cultural rights means we get to do it the way we want to. To be a sovereign nation means we could build our own states and cities if we want to and be incorporated and be okay. Not just money. So when we saw what they were doing, they were setting up a commission to pay themselves millions of dollars, and the community still would get nothing. There was a flaw in that, and today there's still a flaw in it. After a 400-year slavery experience, 88 years of Jim Crow and all of that, I mean, they just give billions of dollars away to everybody else. You all mean to tell me they can't give us any compensation? And why do you consider it a government handout?
Let me ask you this. This is a very fundamental question. Who is we? How do we define the we that's supposed to get the money? Now,
the ones that were on the ship being bought over, not Barack Obama because he had a Kenyan daddy. He don't get no
right
money because he ain't in on
okay
that. Just the people that. But let me say this just for clarification.
Now,
Don't get me wrong. I've suffered all the racism and stuff living, but I'm an empowerment being.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to turn it around. Some of us are strong enough and conscious enough to do that. Some of us. But for the majority of us, they would need assistance. But, of course, when they pull racism on us, I said, if something needs to be repaired and I can fix it, people never look at my color. They say, how much? I cut
okay
that out. I can empower, I understand we're supposed to be empowered. If we see the slavery experience and see the position we're in, we're the strongest people on the planet. Why would we be needing anything from them? Go back in history. Who created everything? Even during the slavery experience, go back to every invention. Who invented it? Even Jack Johnson, the boxer, could invent a monkey wrench. We're powerful people if we draw from our power. Why have people been working so hard to ride our backs and beat us down and use us to build this country and be not even compensated? Unless we sell out. But I agree with you all. When you have your mind connected, you can have programs where you can get 40 acres and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah, because there's a town, matter of fact, we started the year off there 1 year with a podcast. For those who don't know, share with us about Eatonville, what you know about it.
You probably know more than I do, but it's right here in Florida.
It was founded by a black man. Founded by a black man.
I know that.
About,
and we would have had a lot more towns founded by black men. Chicago was supposed to be founded by DeSable. Do you know they finally gave him a highway? Finally?
But that's the artist's hometown.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's where I'm at. But where is the compensation? Right. So where's the compensation? So my thing is, I don't expect nobody to give me nothing. I look for my own knowledge, do my own research, get the truth, and get ahead.
But here's the reality. Even Eatonville has suffered from a lack of maintenance. So when we think about all these blacks who established communities, at some point what happens is, you know what happens, they have to go in and remodel, reform, what's the word, going into these neighborhoods.
But now Eatonville, although like you said, it needs some, because I haven't been up there in 3 years or 4 years, Eatonville is its own municipality. It's been its own municipality for over 100 years.
But they've had men, I met a white guy who was a construction manager. He's been doing some work in Eatonville because it's so needed. There's buildings that needed to be retransformed and all that. So at some point, black folks may have to reach out for help outside the community in places like Eatonville because they haven't been able to maintain it. So we have to realize that we all are one in the sense of a community of people in Orlando, whether you're black or white. What do we do to help Eatonville maintain its historical beauty and character? You got to help.
There's enough black money in Orange County, Florida, to take care of all that, in my opinion.
So why would a white man have to go in there and do work when there's so many other black people in the community?
Because we're not taught. We aren't taught. We us and ours. You got athletes like LeBron James and basketball players and football players making millions of dollars. When do they get together? Just 10 of them and do something.
Yeah.
But I don't blame other people. I try to do where I am. You can't talk about what anybody else is doing if you're not doing nothing.
Well, Chicago's home of many historic black entrepreneurs that came out of Chicago. Don Cornelius, John H. Johnson, George Johnson, Joan Johnson, Dempsey Travis, Nation of Islam,
goes on and on.
Chicago goes on and on with black entrepreneurs.
Sam Cooke, music, that whole thing. Blue, Muddy Waters came here to do. I mean, it's a whole bunch of stuff, but everybody's not unified. It's just go off for yourself.
And this lobbyist system corrupts everybody. That's why we got to get rid of this lobbyist system, in my opinion, because money talks and people change in their values and beliefs because they're getting paid. There's so much corruption that
money,
we got to get rid of that.
But
system.
You need consciousness. You don't need cash.
Tell that to people like Bobby Rush, who got totally corrupted in the last 2 years by pharmaceutical companies, promoting all these jabs for the last 2 years. Senators.
Hold on, Viata. Both of you, hold on a minute. Hold on. Let me take in this next caller here before time escapes us. 314 area code, your mic is open. You have the floor.
Viola, you made some good points today.
Oh, thank you.
This stuff about reparations is a bunch of hogwash. You hear all these things continuing to go on. And you know, the word slave is being used in a misconception way. Because we visualize it as what folks experienced in the United States. You know, why everybody want to sue the federal government? Federal government didn't have anything to do with that. Show me where. Federal government didn't profit off of slavery. Where? Slaves didn't build America. Where? Who is this we, like you said, L.A.? Come on now. Why are they talking about Germany and Japan? Germany is not on the U.S. soil. What they do is in Germany. Japanese reparations because you had Japanese U.S. citizens that was not afforded due process. And then you talk about what happened on the ships. According to journals, that wasn't what people did. Those passengers, or whatever you want to call them, they was allowed to come up on deck and exercise. It was washed and it was fed. It had to be fed. Why did they bring supplies offshore? And who put them on the ships? So why are you blaming America for what somebody else done that was not illegal? Yeah, how was it illegal? All these questions people like to buck dance and skip by. L.A., I used to be a member of Encore back in the day. Lifetime member. And things have changed. It went completely awry. So those are the questions that need to be asked. The federal government don't have control over states like people want to believe they do. So if the federal government and Sheila Jackson Lee, who's a congressperson, agree to that, so what states is going to go along with it? Federal government can't make the states do anything. The federal government gets its power from the states. The state legislators get their power from the people of the states. Blacks don't make up no majority of no state here in the United States. Even in Mississippi, where they're the largest population percentage, it's only 37%. And half of them kids, you can't even vote. L.A., explain that to me, will you? Viata, explain that to me. You talk about a Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street, that was Creek's land. How the hell did blacks get that kind of money to build like that? European style of building. Now I know you had some artisans that came out of Chicago, so they were building buildings in Chicago. It looked similar, but that land belonged to the Creek. They don't sell land forever. They're just like in Africa. You buy land, you only have possession of it for a certain period of time. That's it. 40 acres in England. How are you going to give away Indian land? It was Indian land. Sherman had no business of making those agreements. He was not a politician. He was a general who, by the way, agreed to going out west and said that the best thing to do with these Indians is to kill them all. Go ahead, Viola.
I agree with your premise that the federal government doesn't control the states, but how do you get an agency like the CDC to claim we have this pandemic and all the states have to follow the rules of a federal agency and do what they say and force people to take medical injections that they don't want? How do you – that's the crazy part of this twilight zone we've been in, is this federal agency all of a sudden can tell states and their people what to do because they claim we have a pandemic that was so –
Let me ask that question for you. Let me answer that question for you. You know why that's happening? Because people don't read. CDC have never put a mandate out because they don't have the authority to put a mandate out. All they can do is recommend. People don't read. They go for the okey-doke and bamboozlement. And, man, this sounds like something's going on here. They're a bunch of dummies. CDC have no authority, nor does the federal government have any authority to tell you or make you take shots.
I know some people on their fourth shot now.
But the public school education system built into children to comply with everything that comes from the federal government. You have to comply. You have to comply. Don't ask questions. Just do what you're told. And that's why we had the last 2 years of Twilight Zone.
In Viata, what happens if you don't comply?
Then you have consequences.
The federal government has no policing powers. Where is the police of the federal government that have jurisdiction, authority over municipalities? Like that crazy mess that they go into Joe Biden about police reform. The federal government has no power over local police. Local police are established by state constitutions. Those 50 states are 50 separate countries. Just like the Indians, they were sovereign nations. When Lincoln said that Union forces need to release his slaves, that's the only authority he had. Those slaves was contraband. Contraband, because they went to the Union lines to seek refuge, and he released them. He had no authority to release slaves that was being held by Indians. Indians are separate nations. He had no authority to release slaves in those states that had seceded. They said, we are no longer part of you. Just like it is when your wife walks out the house and say, I don't need you no more. You ain't got no authority on her. Just like Tina Turner went to Europe and took up residency. The U.S. has no authority, jurisdiction over her. How easy is this to understand?
Well, you got like Congresswoman Sheila Jackson, who's the most ignorant of all, and including all the Democrats who are promoting this $40 billion to foreigners, and they're, okay, let's give some money to African Americans. And just like you shared, all this miseducation of the Negro is the problem. And you got Congresswomen with power like Sheila Jackson, all her Democratic cohorts, pushing these agendas that don't make any sense to us, and we need to get rid of all of them. That's part of the whole lobbyist system.
Well,
and
once again, who is the we? I don't vote for Sheila Jackson Lee, and I don't think you do either.
You're
in Florida, so to say that we need to get, that's for the people in her district. I think it's the 5th district in Texas. That bunch is the one that keeps sending that woman back to Congress with all these crazy ideas. I don't need her to enact bills and legislation for me in my state. And see, here's another thing. The states need to take back the powers that they have afforded the federal government and also what the federal government has assigned to itself. States that any time can tell the federal government to go to hell. What can they do to it? Hold back money? Well, states don't have to give them their tax revenue, so they won't have no money to hold back. Simple as that. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to have states like your Florida, like your Texas, like your Missouri, going to tell the federal government to go to hell. Go to Chicago. Go up there to the Maine that has a sanctuary for abortions. You want abortion? Maine got in California got sanctuary space for you to come have your abortion all you want. But you're not coming to Missouri to do it. You're not coming to Mississippi to do it. You're not coming to Florida to do it. You're not coming to Texas to do it.
Well, okay. We got a few minutes left.
And you know, here's another thing, too, and real quick.
Okay.
Them Africans was expelled. Africans got rid of their riffraff. African tribes did. Had been doing so for way before they even met a white face. Kanye West said it was a choice. You're damn right it was a choice. Europeans didn't go into the interior bringing out slaves. They didn't go up to the Burkina Faso, Ghana border to capture slaves. Them people brought them people out themselves. They traveled from Burkina Faso all the way down to Accra to the slave dungeon, quote-unquote slave dungeon. It was storage rooms, what they were, really. So if the people all along the way, L.A., the thousands of people that they passed by all along the way from Burkina Faso all the way down to Accra, these people have been little caravans of 20 people being escorted by two or three. Well, damn, if they cared about them, why come they didn't rescue them? They only had two or three that was escorting them down those paths from Burkina Faso to Kumasi, from Kumasi down to Accra. You know why? They didn't care about them.
So whites
did not leave no... Whites didn't leave no slave caravans with muskets.
Do you think these Democratic congressmen and women are ignorant of that? Or, you know, you would think by now they would
have that knowledge.
They don't
talk about that, Zayana. They don't talk about it.
That's the shame of this H.R. 40 that we only –
they're trying to get some money. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
they're trying to bamboozle people.
That's the whole problem. This 15-member commission ain't going to be interested in hearing that truth you just spoke. So why the hell should they even be existing, a commission that's going to perpetuate the lies that we've had for hundreds
you know,
of years?
You know, just like the Amish here, when they were sending out those checks in the mail from the federal government at $1,200, $600, you know what? The Amish refused the check. They said, we don't want that money. They said they didn't want
the money.
Are you
talking about those stimulus checks?
Yeah, the Amish gave their stuff back. They didn't take no stimulus checks that was sent out in the mail from the IRS. Read it.
Yeah, you know, that's a good
thing. And they've done the right thing. And see, here's the thing, too. Some black representatives in that don't gave up on blacks as far as moving into the mainstream of America. They got deplorable educational system. They're not putting out people in those areas where there's high need and high demand, like STEM field. The kids, it's just one of the deplorable things that's going on is that these kids, these black kids in these urban schools, and also they'll move out into the county, are not being educated. So they don't gave up on them as far as getting out there earning on their own. Now they want these handouts through reparations. Handouts through reparations. Reparations for what? Blacks are mixed. So if you got $100 going to a pure-blooded Africa and landing on the shores, like Muhammad Ali, he's mixed with Irish. So if he was to get $100, if he's pure-blooded, well, how much would he get if he's 40% Irish? $6? Think.
That's the whole joke. How are you going to determine who gets this reparations when there's so much mixture of cultures and races right now? That's the joke, really.
Yes,
Shaquille O'Neal doesn't look like he's Irish, but he's got Irish somewhere in that bloodline.
And listen to the argument. Wait a minute. Listen to the argument. Why did he? Well, they burned down Wall Street. Who burned down Wall Street? Federal government had nothing to do with that. If that's the case, look at all these Negroes to the tune of over 4,600 that done shot each other and killing over 690-something within the last year from Memorial Day of 2021 to Memorial Day of 2022. So what reparations do they owe for shooting all these black folks?
Well,
black kids having to wear,
you know what,
black kids wearing bulletproof backpacks.
That is a very good point. What reparations do black folks owe other blacks who shoot and kill other blacks or injure other blacks?
Not only that, for tearing up damn land, neighborhoods, burglarizing, carjacking. Then somebody's going to say, well, they still got that slave gene in them. Oh, bull crap. There's always some damn endless excuse circling around, coming back again, just like a boomerang.
Well, I think from the comments on this video, this virtual rally, it's only 1,000 views on this, but majority of the comments were like, no, we do not agree with H.R. 40. I just was amazed that so many people were against this rally for reparations. So I think we as Americans are waking up to the corruption in our government and things like this, where a commission needs to be established. And I just hope if they do have a commission that people will come forward and tell the truth about slavery, for one, that we, white folks did not go in there.
They're not going to let them talk. See, some of the biggest races in the United States are blacks. Think about it. Are bigger races than whites are. Whites don't want to have nothing to do with you. And other groups neither. Blacks are some of the biggest races that you can. You mean to tell me those 4,600 that were shot by other blacks, that none of them blacks used the N-word when they shot them? Take that in. Take this in. Huh? So if you use the N-word when you commit a civil rights violation against a citizen, if you white and you use the word N, it's a racist move. But what about blacks? Is it not the act? Skin color ain't got jack to do with it. It's the act. So blacks go out and commit these acts that when whites do it and they accuse to be racist or not, is not the black person a racist too? And then again, like you said once more, who in the hell is black? Is Derek Jeter black? You don't look black to me. Come on now. You said, Elon Musk is a for real African-American. He was born in Africa. Teresa Hines Carey, a real African-American. She was born in Africa. And a whole lot of other ones.
That, which is why all the more reason why we should all just be called Americans, because of this mixed pot we're in. And I have, you know, biracial grandchildren, and they're just starting to recognize, you know, race issues. Oh, that's a black person. Before this year even, there wasn't even conversation about who's black or white or what. But now they're starting to pay attention to, oh, that's my black grandfather or whatever. So it's time for us to promote Americans, not African Americans, Native. We're all Americans with different histories. And as you said, there's some of us got I got Irish blood in me because my mother's side of the family was Native American, and a whole bunch of Native Americans had Irish men sleeping with Indian women. So let's get real, people, and stop this division. And that's what I just thought about. This H.R. 40 is just another divisive tactic to keep black folks fighting each other, fighting white folks, fighting the government, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, fight, fight, fight. That's what they're all these congressmen, the Democrats especially, all keep us divided, focused on racism, because you know if they're going to form a commission to study slavery, it's going to be about race instead of mental illness. How about we just focus on mental illness from our history to now?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Ellie, I sent you that list of what's categorical, 50-some-odd areas. Yeah, you talked about that yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
What's that lingering? What's one of the items, lingering effects? Lingering complaints, effects. It's lingering conversation about slavery, and then so handily only stopping at the shores of North America. Let's go back to Africa. Let's go back to Africa and see why come they got rid of these people, not only to the west, but also to the east.
South
why?
America.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did they get rid of these people? Why is it that some of them talk about, like my wife talk about, the intergenerational curses? The
yeah.
sins of the father follow the son. Matter of fact, you owe these people that's talking about reparations, they owe these African tribes reparations. What did they do in Wall Street, burned down the town? Well, you had African tribes that had their town burned down. What they talk about here, rape and pillage, well, you had African tribes causing rape and pillage on others. It's still going on as we talk there in central Nigeria with the Fulani coming in, killing and doing ethnic cleansing to the Yoruba. It's going on today.
Well, I think, you know, when we, this group on this phone call, when we have this topic come up in our circles, we need to bring some truth and correction to the idea that blacks were kidnapped from Africa. That's a lie that has been proven over and over again. We know it. And now, going forward, we need to have these conversations with our friends and relatives to stop this misunderstanding lie
yeah.
that blacks were stolen from Africa. That's not true. It is not true. And yet this whole
right.
H.R. 40 is based on the idea that black people were stolen from Africa.
Who rolled the Africans out to the ship? It wasn't white. You act like it was a zillion whites on those ships. If you had a zillion whites on the ship, you wouldn't have no room for the slaves.
Oh, my God.
It was Africans that rolled them out to the ships. A ship that
yeah.
sails the seas can come so close to the shore, it is going to bottom out. They can't sail upriver. So it was Africans that brought them people out conveniently. That's
so
why it was a choice, like Kanye West said.
Yeah, it was a choice. That's right. We have
and
to
guess what the Nigerians said? Nigerians today, of recent, say if they had a chance, they'd sell y'all again.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to be the ones to re-educate our friends and families whenever we have an opportunity, because this lie is causing all kind of crazy activity like H.R. 40 and 15-member commissions. They might even
You know what? Here's another thing, too. Don't waste your time with that. I told Ella, why are you wasting your time? You know, we're talking about this stuff is a waste of time. I'm going to be like the Amish. I don't want to die. It's a waste of time. Educate your kids. Teach them skills.
Yeah.
Take them to lectures. These colleges have all kind of lectures that goes on with speakers that come in and talk on a variety of subjects, from technology, medicine, exploration. Look at Elon Musk, the possibilities that he's opening up with what he's doing for entrepreneurship, businesses. That's what we need to be talking on. Damn it, you got these idiots that went to school back in them days for philosophy. And guess what? It didn't pay off. You got a whole bunch of them always ready to tell some blacks there's something wrong with y'all mind. No, it's something wrong with your mind. Hear that all the time. Something wrong with your mind. You went to the back door.
I've got my work cut out, starting with my own grandchildren, my family, that we need to stop this lie that black people were stolen from Africa. And maybe we can spread this truth as we just work within our own community, our own family, and then work outward until this truth, that lie, is dispelled and killed. And maybe these congressmen and women.
Yeah, be careful
starting
who let educate your kids. Be careful who they teach you. Because that teacher got a black face, that don't mean it's the best for you. That's some of the worst. Like this critical race theory, which is designed to shame white folks and throw guilt on them, especially their kids. So when they grow up and get to age, they're going to carry on this H.R. 40. It'll go on another 40 years, 80 years. Hell with this bull crap.
Yeah, just wasting our money. Another example of a government wasting money. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, thank you,
That's another example of some fools. Only reason the Democratic Party cater for blacks is for votes. That's it.
Well,
votes.
We're going to wrap it up for the
money hungry. Power and money hungry. And then I feel like more than anything, the industrial military complex is driving a lot of what they do. Because if they don't keep up the division and the warmongering, the military going to lose money. And that's
the division is occurring. The division is, you got blacks today, young ones, do not go along with that stuff and don't want to be a part of those blacks that do.
Right, right.
My grandson told me that, yeah, they don't want to be a part of those blacks that's coming up with this kind of victimization, this racist. This racist attitude, always harping on white supremacy. They don't want to have nothing to do with them. Hell, you can't live near them. They tear up your damn shit, rob you. Take your car, tear up the neighborhood, mess up the schools.
Well, see there, Pianke, you're doing a good job in your position as grandparent, wise grandparent. That's what we all need to do is help our grandchildren and this younger generation come out of the lies and deception that we've all heard throughout our lifetime. It's time to stop that nonsense. And that's why we got to stay healthy as grandparents because this younger generation needs us to lead them into truth and light and not and out of this deception and crazy warmongering that we've been in for so long.
Yeah, all right, L.A., well, nice talking to you.
Okay, right, everyone, LA, have a good rest of the day.
Good job.